thousands, teshu, in those hellish planets, sarveshu, all, chap, also, sarve, all, eva, indeed, adharma vartinaha, persons not following the Vedic principles, or regulative principles. Yea, kechit. Whosoever. Iva. Here. Udittaha. Mentioned. Anudittaha. Not mentioned. Cha. And. Avanipate. O king. Paryayena. According to the degree of different kinds of sinful activity. Vishanti. They enter. Tatahiva. Similarly. Dharma anuvartinaha. Those who are pious and act according to the regulative principles or Vedic injunctions. Ituratra. Elsewhere. Iha. On this planet. To. But. Unabhave. Into another birth. Te. All of them. Uvayashishabhyam. By the remainder of the results of piety or vice. Nivashanti. They enter. So translation. My dear King Parikshit, in the province of Yamaraj, there are hundreds of thousands of hellish planets. The impious people I have mentioned, and also those I have not mentioned, must all enter these various planets according to the degree of their impiety. Those who are pious, however, enter other planetary systems, namely the planets of the demigods. Nevertheless, both the pious and impious are again brought to earth after the results of their pious or impious acts are exhausted. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. This corresponds to the beginning of Lord Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita. Tata dehantara praptihi. Within this material world, one is simply meant to change from one body to another in different planetary systems. Urdham gacham disatvasta. Those in the mode of goodness are elevated to the heavenly planets. Ato gacchanti tam saha. Similarly, those too engrossed in ignorance enter the hellish planetary systems. Both of them, however, are subjected to the repetition of birth and death. In Bhagavad Gita, it is stated that even one who is very pious returns to earth after his enjoyment in the higher planetary systems is over. Shine punye marcha lokam vishanti. Therefore, going from one planet to another does not solve the problems of life. The problems of life will only be solved when we no longer have to accept the material body. This can be possible if one simply becomes Krishna conscious. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita in the 4th chapter, text 9, Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tatvataha chakva deham punar janma naiti mameti sojuna. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. This is the perfection of life and the real solution to life's problems. We should not be eager to go to the higher heavenly planetary systems, nor should we act in such a way that we have to go to the hellish planets. The complete purpose of this material world will be fulfilled when we resume our spiritual identities and go back home, back to Godhead. The very simple method for doing this is prescribed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sarva Dharman Parakshasha, Mamekam Sharanam Braja. One should be neither pious nor impious. One should be a devotee and surrender to the lotus feet of Krishna. This surrendering process is also very easy. Even a child can perform it. Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto Madhyashi Mam Namaskuru. One must always think of Krishna by chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. One should become Krishna's devotee, worship him, and offer obeisances to him. Thus one should engage all the activities of his life in the service of Lord Krishna. So, Om Gana Tumadandasha Gananjana Shmadaya Chachurim Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So there's an interesting branch of theology that is called theotocy. Basically, this branch means, or the name of the branch means, the justice of God. And it's very hard for people to understand the justice of God, you know, without accepting the principle of reincarnation and the principle of karma. It's actually impossible. Because we see people suffering. Now, these hellish planets are being described here, and people may be incredulous when they hear about the heaven, these hellish planets, and think, you know, how is this possible, you know, this sort of suffering. But even if you travel to different places in this world, you'll see people suffering, perhaps not exactly in the same way, but at least they're experiencing as much misery as the people in the hellish planets are experiencing. I mean, really, like torture, and what to speak of this abortion, you know, where the little kids, even little kids are fetuses, not kids, but they're actually cut to pieces and sucked out of their mother's womb. I mean, this is hellish. It's like there was a story yesterday in the newspaper, not clicking on read newspapers, we just read the internet. So we don't disobey Prabhupada's instruction about not reading newspapers because we just go on the internet. So anyway, so that's following the letter of the law without the spirit of the law. So anyway, we're reading how in Great Britain there's a big problem now because so many more boys are being born than girls. Of course, it's the same thing as in India. And it turns out that people are using this selective process, you know, selecting the selective abortion. They have ultrasound, and then they if they find out it's a girl or someone they don't want, or, you know, someone a little ugly, they decide to abort the fetus. So it turns out that there's like tens of thousands of girls that have been killed in the last 2 or 3 years in Great Britain. And so this abortion, you know, it appears, you know, someone's just like extracting some flesh from their body, just like if you have a cancer. You go to the doctor, the oncologist, and the doctor will, you know, cut it out and give you some chemotherapy or something like that to prevent it from growing further. In the same way, people think that that's what abortion is. Many people do. It's just, you know, it's a flesh in my body. It's not a living entity like that. But it actually is, and that living entity is suffering. And there was one movie. It was called The Silent Scream. I don't know if anyone's ever seen that movie. Anyone seen the movie? You've seen the movie. And it's about it was a movie of a fetus being aborted. And basically the knife was coming to cut up the fetus, and the fetus was trying to escape, and then after that he was cut into pieces, and then this vacuum cleaner, not actually a vacuum cleaner, but, you know, vacuum hose or whatever, sucked out the little tiny pieces of the fetus. So, So, I mean, there's hellish suffering right there. And, of course, in so many places, in many countries, the human beings are enduring great suffering. And also, what to speak of the animals. And if you look, the other day I saw a video of someone catching fish with one of these nets. And the fish are just flopping them all over the place. And according to even the scientists, the fish have the same ability, they experience the same type of pain that we do. Their system, you know, the nervous system is such, I guess it's the primitive nervous system, primitive brain, and they're experiencing much pain. So imagine just by being in that situation, just flopping around like that. And yesterday I saw one video of the Japanese doing that with dolphins. And dolphins, of course, are probably more intelligent than human beings. Actually, all these animals are intelligent. We saw something, there was something posted by one of the devotees on the internet that showed the great intelligence of all these living entities, like ants, for example. You think they're pretty stupid, but there's these ants that when there's a flood, they all hold hands with each other, and they make a living raft where they can float down the river and not drown. It's pretty interesting, isn't it? Can imagine that, you know, kumbaya with the ants. You know, the ants, I don't know. Of course, ants don't have hands, I understand that. You know, tentacles or whatever they, claws or whatever ants have, they just hold, and they understand how to do that. Can you imagine? And even though their brain is just like so tiny, I mean, I know some human beings with a brain is equivalent size, but anyway, their brain... Actually, the human being has, according to the size of its body, the biggest brain, you know, proportionally to the size of the body. There's animals with bigger brains, but, you know, proportionally. So anyway, getting back to the point that the Japanese were catching these dolphins, you know, somehow or other people, like the Greenpeace people, have a lot of compassion for dolphins, but they don't have compassion for cows. I don't really understand that, you know. It's like a non sequitur. That, you know, you don't want dolphins to be killed, poor dolphins, but why about the cows and the other entities? Anyway, so the Greenpeace people were actually protesting this, because the Japanese, they actually surround the area with boats and nets, and they confine these dolphins into one small area. The dolphins are just jumping up in agony and in fright, trying to escape, and then they're cut to pieces. And then, of course, in Japan, sometimes they sell the fins from these different animals. It's considered a delicacy. Even in America, if you go into a Japanese area, Chinese area in the city, you can find all these different types of delicacies, like fins from sharks, or octopus. You know, you think an octopus is not intelligent, not experiencing pain, but it turns like that. It turns out that an octopus has more than one brain, which is really interesting. He has a brain in his main section of his body, whatever that is called, and the tentacles. He has a brain in each tentacle. Yeah, so these are intelligent, feeling, living entities. Can you imagine that? A brain in each arm. That'd be interesting. So he's experiencing pain. You know, you capture it, you think it's just an octopus, or just any of these living entities. They experience pain. And so there is hell on earth for most of the living entities. Most of the living entities are experiencing hell on earth. You know, there's a few, the minority of us, you know, have our amenities. You know, we have central heating, and we're here sitting here in the temple very comfortably, and we have nice clothes to protect us from the winter. But that's a minority. And even amongst human beings nowadays, there's so many, billions of people don't have access to adequate water, you know, fresh water, and what we would consider the basic amenities of life. So there is so much suffering going on. right now. I mean, it's incredible. And even, let's say, you know, you're the upper crust and you have all these amenities you're enjoying here, sitting in the temple room. It's nice and warm and cozy, whatever. And you can go out in your snowshoes, play in the snow, whatever. Then, ultimately, you are going to be suffered in this world, even in this lifetime. I mean, just like recently I visited my mother's husband in an extended care facility in New York, or a rehab facility. And the poor guy, you know, he had tried to enjoy life to the utmost. There's pictures of him in my mother's apartment, of them going on cruises, them doing this, them doing that. And there he is, lying there, you know, crying, because he can't even lift his leg. You know, the therapist is saying, you know, lift your right leg. He says, I can't do it. I'm thinking about it, but it just doesn't happen. And he's in agony, wearing diapers at his age, and in extreme pain. He wants to go home, but he can't go home because he can't even get to the bathroom by himself. So this is hell. It really is hell. And if we're on the bodily platform, even if we're a Krishna, even if we're in the Krishna consciousness movement, but if we're on the bodily platform, things like that are waiting for us too. So therefore it behooves us to become detached from this world. And what to speak of the hell we experience when, from other living entities, because we know the threefold miseries, adhyatmika, adhibodhika, and adhidaivika. There's miseries from other living entities, miseries from the material energy in general, and miseries from one's own body and mind. You know, has anyone here ever had a migraine headache? I know some of you have. You know what it's like? I mean, I haven't experienced a migraine headache, but from the people who have, they tell me what it's like, and it's like having someone with a drill bit, basically, into your brain, or a hammer into your brain. I mean, you're throwing up from the headache. I know one of my godbrothers, Seth Rupmarsh, has had migraine headaches quite a bit. And, you know, for days you're in intense pain, you're throwing up, and the body is capable of giving you that much pain. Incredible. So that's hell. So don't become incredulous when you read this stuff here. I mean, some of the descriptions of hell here are actually less painful or less extreme than what we experience in this world. So there is hell. So let's talk about theodicy for a second, the justice of God. You know, why? Why does that cruel person up there, Zeus, why is that, you know, cruel person subjecting us to all these miseries? And that's an interesting question. And there's a reason for that. There's a reason. He is not subjecting us to all these miseries. We are subjecting ourselves to these miseries. And the reason for that is twofold. One is that we're attached. And because you're attached to something, even though you're not that thing, you experience pain. That's life. I mean, I experience pain when one of my electronic gadgets goes haywire. You know, I experience pain when, you know, I have to pay a bill. You know, when you have to write a check, it's just like the most painful experience for someone from my ethnic background. So, because of attachment. That's one reason why we experience pain. Like, if you're not attached to this body, you won't experience this pain. You'll understand what's going on, but you won't experience as pain. You experience it as pain. That's one reason. Another reason is that we did something to deserve the reaction that we're getting. So there's that justice. And maybe we did that thing in the past life. We didn't do that thing in this life. Maybe 10 lifetimes ago we did something. And then we're getting a reaction for that. So that's the justice of God. But to rectify our consciousness, to help us understand that the actual source of misery is separation from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's what makes us miserable. because we're separated from our relationship with Krishna, and we're in an unnatural situation. So, and that's all this misery is, a teaching, a learning experience, so that we ultimately will revive our relationship with Krishna. So, anyway, so any questions or comments? There's a lot of other points here. Oh yeah, just one other point Prabhupada makes very explicitly, is that if you know about Krishna's transcendental pastimes and activities, then you don't have to take birth again in this material world. So, therefore, one of the most important activity of the Krishna consciousness movement is to be absorbed in Krishna's janma karma, chana yivyam, transcendental activities, appearance in this material world. By doing that, you become attached to Krishna, and therefore you realize your own spiritual identity in relationship to Krishna. So any other questions, or any questions? Yes.
Can you explain the difference between karmic reactions for people who are not engaged in Krishna consciousness, and the seeming karmic reactions of people who have taken the devotional service?
Okay. So when one takes to devotional service, when one even chants Hare Krishna one time, then karma is finished. In other words, no more karma. However, Prabhupada describes something, several descriptions of devotees experiencing past karma, and he calls it a token reaction. One expression Prabhupada uses, a token reaction. Another, a metaphor Prabhupada gives, he said, is like the fan. That's a simile, actually, when you use like. It's like a fan slowing down. It has some momentum, and it's slowing down. So my understanding, of course, the Shastric understanding is that even though it's not karma, Krishna gives us a small amount of our token or our past karma to help us remember what we did. Not so much. It just, he reduces it. And also he applies it in a specific way to really direct us on the path of devotional service. Because we see, like Prabhupada said, an easy time and Krishna consciousness don't go well together. It's interesting. It just doesn't go well together without challenges. Let's say everything was, the weather here was like Hawaii. I mean, let's give the example of Hawaii. I used to be the GBC of Hawaii. It is the most difficult place to be, Krishna conscious wise. Because you wake up in the morning, the weatherman actually doesn't have to do anything. It's always the same weather. You know, perfect weather. I mean, once in a while you get a hurricane, I understand that, or what they call a cyclone in that part of the world. So it's, you know, you wake up in the morning and the avocados are actually this big. You can feed a whole family with one avocado. And they're just like the Haas avocados in California. Not like the bad ones you get here sometimes that have no taste to them. But like California. And they're this big and they're growing naturally. You just walk into the forest. I remember the first time I went to Hawaii. You know, one block away from the temple was a waterfall. You could just jump off like a cliff into the waterfall. You know, I did that. It was, you know, ecstasy. And then there was a park practically right at two blocks away. You could just walk in. Some devotees were actually living in the park. And they were just camping out in the park. And they were just eating the avocados from the trees and the mangoes from the trees and everything like that. Big, big park in there. There's mountains. You know, Hawaii has these volcanic mountains. So, and then in the temple, practically nobody woke up early. You know, everyone had boyfriends and girlfriends, the pujaris and everything like that. I mean, I could tell you it was just a disaster. Absolute disaster. I went into the temple. When I first arrived there, I knew I couldn't eat anything that anybody cooked because nobody was following the regulated principles in the whole temple. So, you know, if you have a situation like that, there's not much impetus to become Krishna conscious. It's not much impetus. It's just like, huh? The material world is so nice. Nice breeze and the mountains and the mangoes and the avocados. Wow. Yeah, we'll chant Hare Krishna. And then when we went to give Bhagavatam class, I looked around and there was nobody there for class. And I said, why isn't anyone there? So they said, surf's up. And they all came for prasadam later on. And we had a restaurant there, you know, people came and ate. You know, we generated some money, but what a disaster it was. I never want to be in GBC there again. So Krishna is so kind that he gives us these difficulties, you know, these anxieties. I mean, it's like now in my service, I have to deal with things that are a little bit difficult. I mean, as we were talking about one temple last night, we had a phone conference. Every day we're having a phone conference about something. You know, people think, you know, I'm sitting in my house just drinking, what, mint julep or something like that. But we had just to give you an idea. You know, yesterday we had a phone conference about what to do with the Philadelphia temple. It's an absolute disaster. Somehow they brought me on the board. Then before that, we had to talk about how to get money for Krishna West. And so, you know, so we're taking responsibility, but we're putting ourselves in anxiety for Krishna. And that anxiety is purified and helps us remain Krishna conscious rather than just trying to enjoy this material world. So anyway, so Krishna, getting back to your question. So Krishna gives us these miseries because he's very merciful. Actually, the word misery and mercy are very close. And that special mercy, Yashaham Anagrunami Hari, Yej Tahadanam Shanai, that when Krishna especially, Rishay Tahadanam Shanai, when Krishna especially favors someone, he gives them mercy, these mercy, misery. He gives them these difficulties. You know, generally we talk about Krishna taking things away. But he even may take away our material peace. You know, he may not necessarily take away our money or our family or anything like that. Sometimes he does that too. But he takes away things that are impediments in our devotional service. And that's the token reaction. And that's why devotees have to suffer sometimes. Because these things are not... I mean, why do you go to a dentist that's suffering? Because the dentist is taking away the source of your pain, which is your... I remember I had an impacted wisdom tooth when I was young. I don't know if any of you know what that is. That's pretty miserable. And so the dentist, those days, they didn't have a Novocaine or anything. So I had to bite a bullet. I couldn't really bite a bullet. So the dentist was just like chipping away at it. Like three hours. And I was covered with sweat. So, Krishna does that to us sometimes. Without Novocaine. I mean, it would be nice, I mean, from one perspective, that when Krishna wanted to give us misery, he would just give us some, like, Novocaine, we'd go to sleep and the misery would be over, we'd wake up anyway. But not even Novocaine, like a general anesthesia, you know, you wake up and the tooth is gone. That would be nice, but it doesn't happen like that because it wouldn't be good for us. Okay, so on that happy note...